Hello. Welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. We're so glad to be back with you after a long hiatus. I think it was 1 week hiatus, but it felt really long because it was really 2 weeks between broadcasts. Kind of funny how that worked. So we're happy to be back. I am Doobie. What are you looking like that for?
It was 2 weeks between broadcasts?
Yeah. Because we didn't broadcast last week. We did the week before. That means 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's right. Just go.
Okay, fine. 13 days. The last time we recorded on Friday.
Oh.
2 weeks. This time last week, we were on a cruise, and that was nice.
Woohoo!
But it's even nicer to be here with you on the Laughing Place podcast. As I said, I am Doobie. The confused one to my right, who questioned my math, is my lovely and talented wife and co-owner of LaughingPlace.com, Rebecca.
Hello.
And opposite me is Captain John.
Captain John makes his return.
That's right. Captain John wasn't here on our last podcast. He was a little bit under the weather. What did you have? Limey or something?
Scurvy.
Scurvy. Yeah.
It's funnier than scurvy.
And to my left, chiming in over there in the Peanut Gallery, is Fanboy.
Hello.
And as I said, I am Doobie, and we're glad to have you here. Before we get started, I'd like to remind everyone that we can be reached at podcast@laughingplace.com. That's podcast@laughingplace.com. We'd love to hear from you. We have gotten a few emails lately, and it's really nice to hear what you guys think. Mostly positive, but even the negative is good to hear. We can also be reached for voicemails at 866-718-9408. That's 866-718-9408. That is a toll-free call, so we want to hear from you so much that we're going to pay for the phone call because that's the kind of people we are.
We're awesome.
Yeah, we are awesome. Especially my lovely wife, Rebecca. She's so awesome.
Aww.
And because she's so awesome, we're going to let her kick off this podcast as she discusses the big news from the past 2 weeks, the long-awaited, eagerly anticipated, I think we stayed up till 3 a.m. in the morning waiting for the launch of the new Disney.com. Take it away, lovely, talented Rebecca.
Thanks, Doobie. As you Disney fans know, a couple weeks back, Bob Iger announced at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas that Disney.com would reappear with a brand new look. And the trade papers, the newspapers, they picked up on the concept of the MySpace element to it, where they would allow the guests of Disney.com to interact with each other in a more controlled environment, so it would be safer for even younger children to utilize it. But mostly it seemed to be focusing on the fact that most users now have broadband or higher streams, and so they can provide more video and a more fluid motion with their Disney.com. So it finally appeared on February 6th.
My birthday.
Around midnight. It popped up on web browsers for all those people who stayed up to watch it. I will admit I did not. But the next day, I did tootle around a bit, looking at what Disney.com has to offer. For me, it wasn't as much of a change to the actual Disney.com offerings as I anticipated, but the new addition, the Disney XD element, I was really impressed with. I thoroughly enjoyed. They have a lot of games. There are trivia contests and whatnot, and you can do it on a multiplayer level. So if you have some Disney fan friends, you can all jump into a room together where you can, in essence, be challenging each other in Disney trivia contests. And that was fun. I've already wasted some hours there.
I lost. Rebecca won.
Yep.
For hardcore Disney fans like us, are these questions that even we'll find enjoyable?
Yes. I would say so. I mean, they have varying levels. I noticed that they had varying levels. So some of the questions were quite simple, but they also had some that would be more of interest for the hardcore fan like Fanboy.
Yes, in fact, I played the Disney theme park trivia thinking I would sort of ace it, and there were a lot of Typhoon Lagoon questions, and I know I should know all the names of all the slides and everything, but I don't. And it was still a lot of fun, and I would say not too challenging where you're going to be like, who knows that, but challenging enough that you're still going to enjoy it.
Very cool. I haven't had a chance to check it out too much myself, but I certainly will, especially as more features launch. I know it's a little bit buggy right now and everything, but as someone who has created a website on a slightly smaller scale, but still a website for the whole world to see, I know that when you launch, you find the bugs, you fix the bugs, so I look forward to what is coming to be in the next few days.
months or years.
Yeah, days is probably a little bit optimistic.
Yes.
It'll get better, and it's already pretty good. Lots of video, though. If you don't have a high broadband, if you don't have a broadband connection, I don't envy you visiting Disney.com. The next topic is the Pirate and Princess Party, which we were able to attend the first one, which seems like eons ago. How long ago was it, Rebecca? Okay, I got that look.
It wasn't that long ago, but with a Disney cruise in between, it feels like forever.
Because the cruise just never ends?
Yeah, the cruise feels like it never ends.
We need to talk about the cruise and work that sometime. That's the best time in the world.
It's the best kept Disney secret, really.
Move on to the pirates.
Pirate and Princess Party. Captain John, you were there. Did you enjoy it?
I was there, and it was a lot of fun. So, the age group that they're aiming for is a lot younger than I am, of course, but it's still just, a lot of fun. Fireworks were awesome, period.
The fireworks were awesome. What was it called? Magic, Music, and Mayhem?
Definitely.
Oh, my.
Which was a great title because it was beautiful with the princesses, and then when it kicked in with the pirates, especially since it used the Pirates of the Caribbean score from the film, It was awesome. We've seen the fireworks for both Very Merry Christmas and... Mickey's not that scary, but lots of fun Halloween party, and I thought this really blew them both away. The parade. What'd you think of the parade, Rebecca?
The parade, I thought, suffered from the fact that they were trying to incorporate the princess and pirate themes, because when I think of Disney parades at the special events like the Halloween party or the Christmas party, the princess segments for me tend to kind of drag. Just because they're more beautiful, so they're kind of lilting and they're pretty. But I don't know. For me, I like high energy parades. It made me realize why it is that I like Main Street Electrical Parade more than Spectrum Magic, because Main Street Electrical Parade for me had a much more upbeat march type tempo to it, while Spectrum Magic is a more waltz and lilting. And so when I was watching the Pirate and Princess Party and thinking about why is it I'm not totally up and at 'em with this, I realized it's that same element. So the pirate part was really, really cool.
And obviously. It's pirates.
And the princess part with the... They had the several princesses, on princesses riding horseback. And that was very neat. And they had some sword play for Aladdin and Jasmine. So that stuff was nice. But, it was pretty.
What's wrong with pretty?
Nothing's wrong with pretty. I just like my parades to be... upbeat and glowing and going.
Just like her husband. She likes upbeat and happy, not pretty.
No, you're pretty, honey.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Anyway, the parade, you mentioned that, the princesses and pirates. Well, it was just sort of funny that they sort of just clash a bit, because whenever you get to the pirate stuff, it was all, really upbeat and everything. Then the princess stuff was that's pretty, but yet when you sort of blend the two, it gets a little bit sort of bizarre.
It definitely seemed to be a pirate party and a princess party, as opposed to, pirates and princes somehow mixed together, which kind of makes sense, because really, what do they have in common? But it kind of felt like two different parties. The parade most definitely was, let's show the princesses, now let's show the pirates. What did you think, fanboy?
I was not a big fan. I think they did as well as they could have, considering the theme, but... pirates and princesses really don't belong together. And so you're walking up Main Street, you're listening to these beautiful princess melodies, and you're watching pirates sword play. It really didn't seem to flow. I know I'm more corporate than a lot, but it seemed like, let's create a party based on some successful franchises we've had in the last fiscal year. And I think the lighting was amazing, the direction was amazing, they had some neat shows and stuff. And the fireworks are top-notch. But it just didn't really know what I was celebrating. It wasn't Halloween. It wasn't Christmas. I was just sort of there because we needed to do something in January.
Funny thing to note is that nobody was going on Pirates of the Caribbean for some reason. Even though it was the Pirate and Princess night. We show up there, and they actually got, these cool, mysterious fog machines going. And we just walked right on the ride. You'd think it would be jammed.
You know what else that party needed was some better booty. They give you these little bags, and they call them booty bags. And
they call them treasure bags. The guests called them booty bags.
I thought they said booty on the bag.
No, they were treasure bags.
It said booty on the maps.
Did it say booty on the map?
I believe so.
I think it said treasure.
I come up with booty on my own.
All the guests were calling. I think it's a guest thing.
Regardless of whether it was on the maps or on the bags, they do have t-shirts and stuff that say booty, which is funny and very inappropriate in my humble opinion.
But all you got were some beads and like one or two pieces of candy, not like
raisins. Was not Halloween food. Yeah. And raisins
because
trans fat.
Well, see, no rum and raisins, but they can't give you the rum part.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, kids, you know.
That's why they should do the party in Epcot.
Oh, yeah.
I bet it would be a little bit better if they did that. It was a good time, though. I'm glad we went.
I can't wait till next year.
I hope it does return, even though there are plenty of rumors saying the numbers aren't turning out sufficiently for that to happen. But you never know. There was one other thing I wanted to mention about it because, yeah, I remember now. At Disneyland, occasionally they would do special events like annual pass holder parties, and they would do Pirates of the Caribbean where they would put actual people in the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction, and that would be an attraction in and of itself. I think that would have been a good idea for something like this, because it's just one more thing to make it special, to make it worth the extra money, and I don't know, anybody else think that may have been a good idea?
Is it more difficult to do here?
Why?
And the attraction's a little bit different here than in California, and I just don't know if operations-wise, if you have the same kind of access to having cast members be placed at the attraction.
I don't know if the new Disney safety regulations when it comes to attractions that even Disneyland could do it now, because you're not technically allowed to run attractions with people in the ride path.
But yeah. They could do it on the cruise ship, though.
But
yes, they can.
Perhaps
world-famous Disney
international
characters.
Waters.
See, maybe that would be tampering so much, and George would get upset.
Oh, George.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about
George.
Yeah.
Hey, share with everybody who George is.
Oh, George is a, supposedly there was a maintenance worker named George who worked on the Pirates of the Caribbean when it was first under construction, so I guess that would make him a construction worker rather than maintenance worker. At any rate, apparently, he fell, and I think a ladder fell on him or something, causing his death. So to this day, he apparently haunts the attraction, and so certain breakdowns are apparently blamed on George. Actually, I think there was a website, I'm not sure if it was like Travel Channel website, I'm not sure, but it actually, Pirates of the Caribbean in Florida made it onto a haunted list.
Really?
Yeah,
I
probably should have. I should look it up, but it actually made pretty top on like the most haunted locations. But you know, for a cast member story going that far, you know.
Yeah, we've heard. I've talked to some cast members at that attraction, and I mean, some of them will incorporate greetings to him or good nights to him before you know beginning their operating day or their
closing. If you don't say goodnight to George, apparently something really bad will happen.
So yeah, the story of George the Ghost apparently still lives at Walt Disney World's Pirates of the Caribbean attraction.
That's a sweet story. Hi, George, in case you're listening. And speaking of haunted attractions, that takes us to Disney's California Adventure.
You're
so funny. So funny.
It was the ghost of Lafitte, Rome, or John Doe.
Oh,
remember Three Bags Full?
Three Bags Full. They're talking about past entertainment that was at DCA, but has left early on in DCA's operating.
Back when the park was still hip and edgy instead of...
and rather than a ghost town.
Touche. Hey, worked it in. Omeon, which is Chuck Oberleitner and his website, omeon.com, have some very interesting rumors on what might be going on at the Disneyland Resort. And I think the most surprising one and out of nowhere one was they're actually building a new hotel at the Disneyland Resort themed to the Del Coronado, which is a famous hotel in San Diego. And he says it's going to be rather small. It's going to be located where Hollywood and Dine is with a private DCA interest and designed by famed Disney Imagineer Tony Baxter. Now, I know I haven't heard anything about this until I read this article and haven't really heard any from sources that, the few sources I have, whether or not this is actually happening, but I'm curious what Fanboy might have to say about this.
I don't believe a word of it. I mean, and granted, I can put myself out there and when 3 weeks when they announce it, and I look like an idiot, but I'm used to that.
So are we.
Thanks, Stevie. And to me, it just seems weird because the Hotel Del Coronado is what inspired the Grand Floridian and Disneyland Hotel in Paris. I don't think we need another one. But it's, I honestly don't know why we would do that, especially I just listened to Jay Rizzullo talking about where the future of Walt Disney Parks and Resorts, and some investors were asked them if they thought about increasing hotel capacity, and he said they really have no interest in increasing hotel capacity at their parks, even though occupancy is around 80%. So, I mean, anything's possible. That's just where I see it.
And they wouldn't be kidding when they say small. I mean, Hollywood and Nine.
That's the part that caught me. He said it might also go into the kind of the tram loading area, but even still, there's just not a lot of room back there. I mean, I guess technically if they added a hotel there of that size, they wouldn't really be increasing their occupancy. I mean, six rooms probably doesn't really count.
And they already have a hotel in the Hollywood Pictures backlot. I don't know that they need another one.
Now, that one is haunted, though.
Touché.
In doing today's headlines, I was looking over various articles that talk about yesterday's analyst presentation that Fanboy mentioned, and one of the things that caught my eye and kind of brought me back to this story was when they were talking about the Jay Rizzullo remarks regarding the hotels and whatnot, but then they also were commenting on the possibility that Disney would look into creating Disney-themed hotels in urban areas, and the article that I saw specifically referenced perhaps something like the Grand Floridian. And so the fact that the Del Coronado is similar in look to the Grand Floridian and this investors conference, which happened after this article was published, makes me wonder if perhaps somebody, in sharing the information they had with Chuck, perhaps they kind of got their wires crossed, and it wasn't really intended to be a Disneyland-specific event, but something, it was more along the lines of this urban area hotel Disney theme that is mentioned in these articles from that investors conference.
That would seem to make a little more sense to me anyway. Of course, you know, like Fanboy said, in 3 weeks,
totally.
But hey, Chucko, if you're right, more power to you, and if you're not, hey, welcome to the internet.
Yeah, totally.
The other thing he mentioned, which was perhaps even more exciting, although nothing excites me more than a new hotel, to be honest, because that usually comes with the restaurant, but he mentioned that the People Mover track might become an Incredibles attraction, something called the Incredibles People Pod Mover. He says, quote, based on the bubble-like vehicles that shuttle people around Villainous Syndrome's, ooh, there's a good word, Nomanesian Island.
Nomanesan, I think is how it's pronounced.
How do you know that? Why do you know that?
I think I'm getting this from the audio commentary from the Incredibles DVD. I think they say No Man is Sand.
No,
but I could be wrong, you know.
Yeah, we do our research. Way to go, Captain John over there. So, I don't know, that's an interesting concept. They said, he actually said it would be enclosed to get around current legalities that say the clearances there are too small because people can stick up their arms and touch the sides, which I can't imagine why anyone would want to do that on an attraction, but he said that.
This is coming from Judy, who, let me share with you, is the scariest person you will ever ride the Matterhorn with. When we used to ride the Matterhorn, he sits in the seat in front of me. He's a tall guy. What, you're 6 foot, 6'1"?
6'2", thank you.
Oh, okay, sorry, 6'2".
You're even taller than he thought.
Okay, and I am but a short 5'3".
5'2".
Okay, this is true. And when he sits in front of you and you go through the mountain and stuff, he had been on it so many times that he knew which rock stuck out just far enough that he could smack his hand on him. And it makes a really loud noise. And so I'm riding with him.
Yeah, it hurts too, by the way.
I've never been on the ride with him before. This is when we first met. And I keep watching him smack his hand on the attraction as we're going around. And I grew up in the world where keep your hands and arms inside the vehicle. You followed the rules. Oh, no, not Mr. Doobie over here. He, like, wave his hands all over the place. Scared the daylights out of me.
That's why to this day they call me Luke Skywalker.
So, Fanboy, how tall are you?
I have no idea. Let's go 5'10".
All right.
Captain?
I'm 5'10".
All right, now we know.
So now we know.
I'm the short one.
Shocking. What were we...
I'm sorry, we were talking about
the People
Pod
Mover.
Which was your favorite attraction at Disneyland.
Absolute favorite attraction at Disneyland, for whatever that's worth. Anybody got any thoughts on the People Pod Mover? He didn't really talk about what kind of a ride it might be. Any insights or rumors from Captain, Rebecca, or FB?
Well, I just thought it was fascinating because when I first saw The Incredibles, when I saw that, I was thinking of, hey, that would be a good thing to do to the People Mover.
Oh, really?
Yes, I mean, why not? I mean,
that's cool. Are you sure you didn't design this attraction?
Yeah, sure.
I wonder if they would be enclosed and air-conditioned, or enclosed with, like, windows to allow air to circulate through, or how they do that. Because they're not... Now, I guess they have to be somewhat individually powered because they have the speaker systems inside.
Linear induction.
But that's what moves the thing, right?
I don't know. I just know that has something to do with the people. Right, I like to say
that's
it.
Cool.
I just hope it's better than Lafleur.
Ooh, which I wanted to talk about this week, but we're really trying to keep it under an hour. But
it would be great.
And
if
I got a lot to say about that.
It would be great if the People Mover came back in some form, though, because it offered so many nice views of the park, and it gave Tomorrowland a dynamic feel that it's not.
It's
got the same
on the moon.
Yeah, exactly. Tomorrowland. They always say it's a land on the moon.
And for those who've only done the TTA,
right.
Here at Walt Disney World.
The TTA?
I thought maybe I should spell it out for...
Tomorrowland Transit Authority.
And at Disneyland, it's actually cool because it has elevation changes. I guess it uses a different type of induction or whatever so that it can go higher and lower and really get some beautiful views of Tomorrowland and a lovely attraction.
And it weaves over the sub-lagoon with the water.
Now I remember why it was my favorite.
See, that would be the only thing that would be weird about having an enclosed, like, Teen Incredibles People Mover thing in question, because then you sort of lose your views. So it would be a little bit of a different experience.
Well, one hopes it would be a different experience.
If you want to think about, you know, oh, remember the good old days, it might not quite be the same.
Very true. But at least it's not the rocket rods.
Punchline for everything.
All right, moving east to Disney's next theme park, that would be Walt Disney World Resort. There's some interesting information floating around the internet about things happening at Epcot. So I'm just going to go down the line here, and anyone has anything to say, just go ahead and chime in. First of all, apparently it's official. There will not be anything, at least for guests, for Epcot's 25th anniversary coming up this October.
I got nothing.
Anybody surprised in the least about this? Disappointed?
I'm not very surprised considering all the various celebrations that Disney's had recently with the varying numbers. So I think that you... get into it's just confusing. You had 100 years of Walt, 75 of
100 years.
Okay, I'm sorry, Walt's 100th birthday. You guys are harsh.
Year of 100 Walt.
Didn't Eric Robeson do those paintings, 100 Walt?
Okay, see.
No, he did a million Mickeys.
Dear. Okay, so yes, we had the celebration of Walt Disney's 100th birthday. We had the 75th birthday of Mickey Mouse, where they had 75 different statues of Mickey. Oh, and for the Walt's 100th birthday, they had the 100 Mickey paintings done by Eric Robinson, who, by the way, we just found out is some sort of ranking in tennis.
Yeah, for all you Eric Robinson who's a Disney artist fan, he is now ranked on the senior tennis tour.
Yeah.
How funny is that?
So that was kind of a weird little note we got. And then they had the 50th birthday of Disneyland, which some people thought was on May 5th because of the celebration that kicked off on May 5th. So I just think, you know, perhaps you're getting to a point where guests don't really understand what they're celebrating. So
right now, I'm celebrating a Year of a Million Dreams.
Woohoo!
Siemens, the Spaceship Earth's current sponsor, is supposed to have their post show open in March or April.
Yay!
Really? So that area, that would be the area as you exit, where you used to have the AT&T booths
right,
and
now
all
they
that.
Just have a bunch of walls.
Forgive my ignorance, but what is it that Siemens, what should I expect to see showcased there? What types
basically,
of product are they?
Isn't it basically the same thing that would have been there before?
Well, I mean, AT&T was a telecommunications company. Right. Siemens is more of a GE competitor, so they do everything from light bulbs to fire systems to electrical work. So you might see a little bit more, less about phones and more about, look at what cool gadgets we've come up with.
Okay.
Like Interventions?
So energy.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
So more energy-related.
Right.
More energy-related.
But not
stuff.
At the Universe of Energy.
Well, no, I understand.
That would be convenient. Yeah. No,
Will they still have the Alice in Wonderland thing?
They also do... from Adventures Through Wonderland. More people probably saw that post-show based on that Disney Channel show no one saw. But,
Adventures in Wonderland. That was the one with where the white rabbit wore roller skates.
Yes.
Yes. I hear he's currently working at the Sci-Fi Dining Theater these days. But I hear there's going to use some neat technology. They're I hear Siemens wants to work with WDI on using some of their R&D to kind of showcase their exhibit. So it's not just going to be like the new GM exhibit, which is sort of bland.
Okay.
Of all the stuff that I heard about Epcot, the one that excited me the most was that they will be updating the film in O Canada come summer or fall.
Oh.
Canada. Canada. Which, ironically enough, is my home and native land.
Eh?
Really?
No, not really. West LA, but it's like our sister country.
Really?
Yeah.
The French part or the English part?
Oui. And having seen that film not too long ago with some Canadians, it was quite funny to hear how out of date that film is, especially when they went to their section of the country, British Columbia. They're like, yeah, that stuff is still there, but all that grass and stuff, that's now buildings and everything.
It was a beautiful scene of a harbor, and they're like, oh, that's all condos now. They're pointing out all the changes.
So looking forward to that. Anybody have any insight onto what exactly? Is it going to be a major one or a little more minor like the last Wonders of China? Anybody know?
For me, I'll believe it when I see it, because this is something...
This was official. Here, I got it right. See, did you notice?
No, I understand. It was said by the Vice President, is that his title?
Yes, ma'am.
Brad Rex to Deb of All Ears Net. And I realize that it's in development or whatever, but it's just that this was a headline. This was a newspaper story. Must have been a year and a half ago, if not more. And so I'm kind of like, well, it makes me wonder if the film is completed already.
Then it'll be outdated by the time.
And will it be outdated? Exactly it. Will it be outdated by the time it gets into the theater?
Will they keep the song, though? Because that's also sort of...
Oh, they have... That's the most beautiful song.
But maybe they could, re-record it to make it more...
What I'm curious is...
With a Disney Channel star.
Oh, with a Disney Channel star.
Like Hayden Christensen doing it.
Hayden Panettiere. Christensen,
Hayden Christensen and Skywalker.
Which goes back to my Matterhorn thing I was talking about earlier. Anyway.
Do they have one Circle Vision camera that they keep for these kind of things? Because when was the last time we made a Circle Vision movie? Or do they just, make a new one?
I wonder if it'll be digital.
Is it really that complicated? Can't you just, tape 9 cameras together in a circle? No. It's so hard.
Well, let's try that. Let's get together 9 of our friends.
We're going to do that.
Let's get a garbage can and tape them to the outside of the garbage can and walk around, and we'll make our own little night eye.
I think we're making an announcement that we're launching a new Laughing Place service, Laughing Place 360, not to be confused with the Universal Experience.
But Laughing Place 360, a Cinesphere spectacular.
And then in a couple years, we'll close it and put a comedy club up.
I, speaking of a year and a half ago or whatever, I remember Norway was supposed to be working on a new film,
well, that's
too.
That's right. Yeah.
Wow, something new people can bypass.
Yeah, nobody watches them.
That
Norway
poor
film.
And, I used to think that's so bad that people bypass that film. And then
you saw it.
Then we sat
then you had to ride the attraction first.
It's a little scary.
How so?
I don't know. I just remember it being kind of scary. I remember
it scares children.
It's making me uncomfortable. I want to go.
First, the ride scares the children and me personally, but
the ride scares you.
Well, it's just
Oh, because you don't think it's very good. I think it's
terrible.
The ride. I don't have a problem with the ride.
As we mentioned, we were on the Disney cruise, and Captain Tom is from Norway.
From Norway,
and so I asked him.
Yay, Captain Tom! By the way, he's the bomb.
Yeah, Captain Tom.
And so I asked him if he ever been on the Norway attraction. He says yes. And I asked him if he ever saw the film, and he said no. So
are you serious about
yes,
that?
Yes, I am.
That's awesome.
That's really.
That is awesome.
Yet simultaneously very sad.
That film makes my day. Thank you, fanboy.
Anything for you, DB.
And the last Epcot topic that I recall running across was that they are going to be adding to the montage at the end of American Adventure, which I think is more than a little appropriate considering some of the unfortunate things that have happened since they last added to it. So, do you know when they did last update it?
Last updated it in 1994.
So quite a few fortunate and unfortunate things have happened since then, and that's always the tearjerker part of the attraction anyway, and I'm interested to see what they come up with.
Now, how do they have that song? Do they add a couple more woos, or how do they extend the song 43
Or do
seconds?
They shorten what they've already got?
Yeah, maybe they're going to make some cuts.
That's got to hurt the estate of whoever is...
Cesar Chavez, you're not making the cut anymore.
Or maybe it'll go really fast.
I was going to say, they could reduce the amount of time that each person is on screen, especially since the American attention span is supposedly shorter anyway.
What?
It'll be like a test pattern.
It'll just be shorter images.
Disney Excel.
That'll be fun. I'll be interested to see. I have to make sure I go and see it and pay attention to what I see, so that way I'll know the difference, because... I might not, and since there's so many images, I might not actually realize the difference if I don't pay attention.
Disney excels at these montages. I know the American Adventure one brings me to tears. Golden Dreams in California. And the American Adventure gets all of the country. Golden Dreams have to do it with one state, and it still brings me to tears.
Great Movie Ride. Sorry.
That one's good. That one's great.
Remember the one that used to have the animation building?
Is there a vice president of montages in this company?
Senior vice president.
Well, he earns his money because Disney does a montage like nobody's business, and I'm a sucker for montages.
They did have one at Animation, didn't they?
Yeah, it was a tearjerker.
It was a good one.
Yeah, they're good at it. Even on commercials, they do them well. Like, take a listen to this one.
Super Bowl dream just came true. What are you going to do next?
We're going to Disney World! Living the dream!
So that was this year's edition of what's the official name of it?
The What's Next campaign.
The What's Next campaign, or as we all know it, What Are You Going to Do Next? Rebecca.
I'm going to record a podcast.
Rebecca, you want to talk a little bit about that campaign and this year's visit to Disney World?
This year, the Indianapolis Colts won the Super Bowl, so they sent the coach, is that what he's called? Head coach, Cody Dungy.
She's actually a football fan, so don't let her fool you.
And Dominic Rhodes, who I have to admit, I don't know what his position is.
He's a running back.
Okay. I knew that.
Okay.
And
they had them on Main Street, and they had set up a small football field where they had local youth come and get some tips and have a chance to play a little bit of football with Dungy and Rhodes. And that was really cool. They had some Disney characters there dressed up in proper football attire to join in the fun as well. And then that was followed by what is more typical with these types of events, where they are paraded down Main Street with ticker tape and music and confetti and whatnot. And it's really, for me, I really enjoy, we've been able to go to several now. We've been able to see the Red Sox that came following their World Series championship. We saw Jerome Bettis last year.
Yeah, Hines Ward and Jerome Bettis last year, yep.
But it's fun because it's a little different type of fan that you see. It's a little different type of conversation that you hear as you're waiting for it. It's because a lot of times it kind of catches the guests off guard. They may be here on vacation visiting from, you know, Indianapolis or Pittsburgh or whatnot, and all of a sudden they hear, oh, hey, you know, these big football players, these big baseball stars, they're going to be right here on Main Street. You know, I really wanted to see that. And then it's like, okay, so do I want to, I mean, I heard the conversation yesterday. Oh, well, do I really want to sit here for a half an hour and wait for this, or do I want to go to Splash Mountain? So it's kind of funny to hear those types of conversations. And then you also get the dads who are really happy because they're able to sit there while the kids go off and play. And they're just able to kind of hang out on Main Street. But it's a really neat campaign. I don't know what you guys think.
What did you think? No, I think it was a little bit different on how they did the TV commercial this
year.
What did you think, Sandboy?
I love the What's Next series of commercials, whether it's Santa Claus, Anaheim Angels, or Jerome Bettis. But I thought that this one, we've done it since Phil Simms, and I think it's been 21 years now. And
yeah, 1987 it started, right?
Yeah, I'm good.
That would be 20 years.
Well, but it's the 21st one, I should say.
Be precise.
Thank you, Gibby. And they've been sort of classic, and in this one they sort of put that Where Dreams Come True, Year of a Million Dreams overlay on it, and I think it kind of cheapens it in taking our current marketing campaign and just sort of shoving it into what's been going around for years.
What did you think of last year's rendition where they, before the Super Bowl, they had a bunch of players going, like, practicing, I'm going to Disney World.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I think if we did that again, we might have actually, if he practiced a little bit harder, we could have gotten the actual MVP of the Super Bowl, Peyton Manning. But we didn't.
I heard from some people on the street there at Main Street.
The scuttlebutt.
I know, the scuttlebutt on the street was that the Chicago Bears had won that the entire team was going to be coming to Disney World.
Right.
But that the Indianapolis Colts had kind of did one of those, you know, guarantees to the city that we will bring back the trophy. So therefore, they were already booked to, you know, all go back. So therefore, it was just going to be a couple of them that came back to participate in whatever Disney World. I have no idea if that's true. Total rumor from just random people standing beside me who I'll never see again. But I just thought it was kind of an interesting thing. Yep. I remember when the Angels won. Obviously, they were right across the street. They were Disney-owned at the time,
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah, that helped, I think.
And they were all there.
And then they had Angel Day at DCA. Do you remember
that?
That
was fun.
With that incredible fireworks show.
That was so much fun. We had a good time.
It made us relive steps in time.
It was a blast. They had the Angels come to Disneyland in the morning.
I made it a blast.
So. Oh. Hey, I'm putty. Yeah, the Angels come to Disneyland in the morning, and then they went to Anaheim Stadium for their big celebration there. Then they came back to Disney's California Adventure for a parade in the afternoon. And then fireworks, was this all the same day?
Yes, it was.
I think so.
That was one tired rally monkey at the other
I think so. Yeah.
That was awesome.
They had question and answer sessions down there in the amphitheater with the players. They had like three or four players at a time. I think they tried to do like infielders and then like pitchers. And they tried to have, I think they had the coaches all at a different time. And so, and the fans were able to ask all kinds of questions. They had autograph sessions set up. It was kind of like if you've ever been to the, when Disney hosts Primetime Weekend or when Disney World hosts Super Soap Weekend. It was kind of like that.
Or.
What? ESPN The Weekend! I can't even believe I didn't think of that. Oh, I'm so looking forward to that this year. I'm hoping Peyton comes to that. I'm hoping that's when Peyton Manning will show up. He'll show up with his brother for ESPN The Weekend.
Good, because I dropped him from my fantasy team because I can't support him now.
Because he didn't come to Disney World?
You know, what's more important? Indianapolis or Walt Disney World?
I think Indianapolis in his case, but. They signed his checks.
Moving on.
There is no response to that, fanboy. So I've learned a long time ago, sometimes Rebecca is just right.
So do I.
Especially on Taco Day.
That's
only because I cook dinner around here. That's it.
Yeah, what are we doing after this podcast?
I'm having Taco Day. You're such a geek. And speaking of geeks, about the only person at this table who probably has a good handle on this whole Disney deal with Robert Zemeckis, in case you didn't notice, we've segued into a new segment of the show, is Fanboy over there. Fanboy, why don't you clue us in?
Well, Disney announced a long-rumored deal with Robert Zemeckis and his producing partners to create a new studio within Disney that will create motion-captured movies. If you saw Robert Zemeckis' Polar Express or Monster House, or perhaps Beowulf that's coming out later this year. I think that's being released by Sony, if I'm not mistaken. But it uses motion capture where they record an actor's movement and transfer that to an animated style. So it's not animation in a traditional sense where the artist is creating the character's movement 100%, but it is an animated world. And I think it's really interesting. I mean, people have long speculated that Zemeckis' relationship with Disney under the previous administration was not the best after Roger Rabbit came out and there was no sequel. And, you know, it even might bring some life to those Roger Rabbit sequel rumors. And I know Steven Spielberg is involved in that too, but who knows what could happen. And to me, personally, what is most exciting about this is Disney partnering with a creative person that really doesn't have a Disney pedigree besides Roger Rabbit. You know, and really making it a home for creativity and technology and all those Bob Iger things that he keeps mentioning over and over again.
When I read this story, I wasn't that excited just because when I think Polar Express, I think just creepy. The motion capture, it didn't really... the stuff I've seen that I've known to be motion capture animation hasn't really grabbed my attention or my interest. However, today, this being Thursday... The Hollywood Reporter has an article regarding motion capture, which I didn't get to fully read yet, but just the realities of what motion capture is for the industry in regards to its use in, like, Lord of the Rings and its use in the Spider-Man films and whatever.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
Yeah, no, I didn't...
Video games is a really big one.
I didn't realize how integral it is to just the overall industry, so to see Disney teaming up with somebody who's kind of... in many ways, like, at the kind of the forefront of this, I think it's a really, really cool.
And one thing I think is interesting is reading the buzz on the internet, a lot of people credit John Lasseter with this, and I really don't know what role he had to play. But if you read between the lines, it seems like Zemeckis is really excited about Disney doing that real D, digital Disney 3, Disney digital 3D stuff, where like Chicken Little and Meet the Robinsons. And so that goes all goes back to Dick Cook and his team. So I think he should get some props for, you know, allowing, making Disney a place where they're really trying new things when it comes to the movie-going experience.
Props to Dick Cook.
It's nice to hear the Disney Pictures name being attached to the forefront of movie going again, because you think of, like,
absolutely,
with Fantasia.
Fantasound.
Yeah, with Fantasound or whatever. It's just, it's a neat
or
concept. To
Snow White.
I mean, to go back to where it started, but yeah. It's just neat to think that once again you'll hear Disney Pictures in connection with something that's new to the movie going audience.
And I think you should expect to hear a lot about this in the coming months, especially with the annual meeting. I think this is going to be another Oswald Lucky Rabbit scenario where they're really just showing this as we care, we're doing what we feel like we need to do to make Disney the place, the most respected entertainment company in the world.
I know there's been some speculation on the internet that this doesn't spell the end to a feature animation, but certainly lessens their role. If you think about Disney in terms of its animation units, it has feature animation, which is what it's always had. It has Pixar now, which is now within Disney, and now it has this new division.
This is not part of the animation division of the company. This is not oversaw by Ed Catmull. It really is a separate, almost Miramaxian is the way I kind of feel it's coming, in that it's a production company inside the studios. So it's not integrated with Pixar and Disney Feature Animation. Not that they couldn't partner up. I mean, they're in the same house. But, and then the other thing I've been hearing a lot is that Pixar is going to be the 3D place and Disney Feature Animation is going to be the 2D place. And I just was listening to Ed Catmull today talk, and that's not the way it's going to work. They're going to remain two separate entities. Pixar is going to make some modifications to its software to allow Disney to make 3D animated movies, so they can continue making 3D computer-generated movies, and they are reviving 2D animation, but it's not going to be one or the other. It's really going to depend on the project.
And I think that's good news, because, I mean, I love Pixar. I'm glad they're here, but you also, it's also nice to think of Disney feature animation. I remember when Lion King came out, and it was all about how it was the 32nd Disney feature animation, and it's good to see that tradition continue.
Pink pajamas, penguins on the bottom. Pink pajamas, penguins on the bottom.
I so missed the cruise. That was a great week. That was one of the comedians.
To tie into that, I saw Monster House on the cruise, which was capture animation. Yeah. Like, parts of it, I didn't see.
Are you a fan of that sort of animation? I know you're a big animation fan in general.
I don't know. It's one of those things is that I'm not against it exactly. It's not like, oh, it's not animation. It's just more the fact that I usually find the results come across a little bit funny, because it's very realistic, but yet they're fake. I mean, it's like a completely, you know, fantasy location. So it sort of translates sort of odd sometimes that you see very realistic stuff.
And I agree 100%, but I also know it's a new technology and a new art form, so to speak. So I know that they've worked on new software to kind of use to work on eyes, because the eyes were off. And so I think, just like if you look at Toy Story today, you're going to say, damn, it doesn't quite look quite right.
Well, it doesn't. It's so funny. Looking back at any of those, even Finding Nemo now, and you're like, this is what we thought was awesome when this came out. It's like funny now. Which you don't find with 2D. You know, I look at Snow White now, and it's as beautiful as ever. And I mean, to totally change subject, but it does just make me wonder anyway, is this 3D stuff truly going to last the same way that the 2D stuff has over the years?
Well, eventually it's just going to progress to the point where there's nowhere to progress.
Exactly.
Unless it's very, like, in very subtle increments that nobody would ever particularly care about.
But in animation, the goal is not photorealism.
In 3D animation.
It's 3D is still not photorealism. I mean, it's still an animated movie, and in animation, 101 Dalmatians was not supposed to look real. It was supposed to have a style. Cars had a style. Monsters, Inc. has a style.
But that's where the motion capture sort of becomes confusing, because you're using real motion combined with what's supposed to be alternate reality. So you're sort of crossing it a little bit too much.
Right, and that's where my point comes across, is I think they'll find a place where there's a good medium of maybe taking the actor as a guide, but then tweaking it to make it animated and involving an artist.
But even going back to what you were just saying, and maybe I'm wrong on this, I love other opinions, but Toy Story may have a style, but when I look at it now, it looks primitive. Snow White, made, you know, 50 years prior, looks stunning. Why is that?
Well, I think that the part of the problem is that as we're moving, if looking back, they didn't have, Toy Story really didn't have a style as much as I think Finding Nemo. I mean, I know you think it doesn't look as good as you see now, but I think Finding Nemo holds better than Toy Story, or even Incredibles holds really well, because, yeah, they do some things with the backgrounds because they want those to be real, but the characters themselves, they're not trying to create a living representation of Bob Parr.
No, I agree they're not, and yet it's still, when I look at it, it's somewhat jarring to me how it looked. It's hard to explain. I mean, I saw you nod your head earlier, Rebecca, that you don't think 3D will live on in quite the same way as an art form.
Well, that's because, for me, the Pixar stories don't connect with me in the same way that the classic Disney stories did. So for me, what attracted me to the Pixar films and why I feel like I enjoy the Pixar films was, to be honest, I was noticing the technology. I can remember sitting in the theater and being like, wow, look at the way Sully's hair is flowing as he's laying there on the snow. Whereas I was a kid with the other one, so that's going to, you know, totally change my perspective anyway, and I can admit that. But so that's where, for me, the Pixar stories were, for me, interesting because of their technology, so they're not so much because of their story, so it's hard for me to say, because obviously the technology now has been, you know, improved upon. I guess it would be like if for me, Star Wars was something that I saw when I was, you know, six years old, and so it was a story, and I got wrapped up in the characters, and I pretended to be, you know, Princess Leia and whatnot. But now you look back at it, and the effects of it are not as cool as the effects of today. In fact, Lucas improved upon it because he was so disappointed with the way,
right,
you know, it was then versus now. And to be honest with you, the classic Star Wars still connects with me better than what Lucas has done with it now. Is it purely because of the emotional attachment, or is it because the way that the technology impacts the story makes it less appealing to me? I don't know.
I mean, I feel the same way about Star Tours. I feel it looks just as good now as it did, you know,
20 years ago.
That is some bad film.
That does need to be updated. It's really fascinating considering Lucas's, the way he dug in his heels about not releasing his films anymore without the digital uptake. It's fascinating that there hasn't been growth in the Star Tours attraction, that the representation of his company to all of these people coming through is a little dated.
Well, I want to continue this 2D, 3D discussion sometime. At some point in the future, we're going to have Brett Wickham, who's one of our animation columnists on the site, on the podcast, and I know he has some interesting thoughts on it. I want someone to explain to me why I like 2D more than 3D.
I think, though, we need to move on to perhaps the most visually stunning animated feature Disney has released in quite some time.
Are you talking about the classic Cinderella 3?
Absolutely.
That came out this past Tuesday. And while we're laughing about it, of the three of us here that saw it, I think we have three thumbs up.
Of course, I haven't seen it. I mean, I never, you know, I don't even know why I'm here for some of these episodes.
The captain noticed there were no pirates on the cover, and he didn't bother to crack open the shrink wrap. But fanboy Rebecca and I saw it, and I think we've got three thumbs up, don't we?
I've seen twice Charmed, though. That sort of counts. You know, it's sort of the same thing.
Same story, much better executed on the TV.
Twice Charmed, for those who haven't been on the cruise line yet, Twice Charmed is one of the productions that's available to cruise line guests, and it features the story of Cinderella. It's like an alternate story in a similar way that Cinderella 3 is. The Twice Charmed is a wicked fairy godfather comes in.
Franco.
And he, does he make the shoe just not fit, or does it fit somebody else?
He goes back in time, so Lady Tremaine's able to break it
somehow. Oh, that's right. Okay, so the prince doesn't find Cinderella that way. Whereas in Cinderella 3, the fairy godmother misplaces her wand in the early portion, and the Drizella, Anastasia, and Lady Tremaine find it and use it to make the shoe fit Anastasia, and various hilarity ensues as they weave through the reality of Anastasia fitting the shoe.
I liked Cinderella 3, especially after having seen Cinderella 2, which was perhaps the worst cheap quill ever made.
There is no perhaps there.
But that was very bad.
Well, I don't know, have you seen Pocahontas 2?
No.
Pocahontas 2 is up there, too. Yeah.
But that being said...
See, look, I finally seen something.
I don't want to harp on this, but like I love Lion King 1.5 because it's not trying to be a sequel to The Lion King. It's a quirky little film, and it's supposed to be fun. Where Cinderella 3, I couldn't help but compare it to Cinderella, and it's no Cinderella. And so I know those cheap goals, I should go in with lower expectations. I enjoyed it, but I was expecting something more.
Were you really? Because you seemed much more excited about it the other day when you saw it.
I liked it, don't get me wrong, but I think when you're talking about the death to sequels kind of thing, I don't disagree with this. I mean, if this should not have been released theatrically at all. And
it wasn't.
No, what I'm saying is that's sort of, that's what the litmus test a lot of Disney fans have on these things is it good, is it the Toy Story 2? Is it as good just to continue the story?
My litmus test is it embarrassing or is it passable enough to where you can watch it and forget it and the original goes along
as well? And that's where I'm at, but at the same time, part of me still says, you know what, should we really even be doing this?
And yeah. I don't have a problem with it. I'm a very passionate fan of Cinderella. It's my favorite Disney film. Memorized, you know, little storybook of it when I was 3 years old, so people thought I could read. For me, this story was great. I thought the story itself was very cute. The voice talents were good, although the mice were a little over the top for me as far as the annoyingness of their voices.
Who voiced the mice? Do you remember?
I know Corey Burton did one of them.
I think he did both of them, actually.
No, he only did one.
Really? I think he's done everything.
Yeah,
okay.
No,
I thought he did both.
Corey Burton was one of the mice, and then the other mouse was the same voice talent as, I believe, the Grand Duke. I know that he voiced two characters. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry about that. But I thought the songs were cute, and I thought the style of the setting and everything, I thought they did a nice job of capturing the similar look and feel of the classic story. The castle didn't look jarringly different. The color schemes were not jarringly different.
Right.
So, you know, I appreciated all that.
The songs were great. I mean, the reason I don't like Twice Charmed on the Disney Cruise Line is the songs just don't work for me at all. And the songs in this were great. It was quite an enjoyable movie. It was the best of the sequels that I've seen. I haven't seen Lion King 1.5, but the ones I've seen, it was the best.
You have not seen Lion King 1.5?
Don't start with me over there. Don't start. No, I have not seen Lion King 1.5. It's on our list.
Yep.
It was even better than Return to Neverland, which does have the best Disney song in history. I'll try.
Yeah, whatever.
Dude. please don't disrespect Laughing Place as a source for Disney information based on Doobie's comments.
See, here's the funny thing is that because you have Twice Charmed, and now you have the Cinderella 3, which is actually sort of like an adjustment of the story. It's like now you have this show that's sort of like completely non-canon.
Well, and that's what I like. I mean, I disagree with Doobie on Twice Charmed. I like Twice Charmed. And what I liked about Twice Charmed is it's not canon. And that's what's fun about it, is it's not trying to take itself too seriously.
But now that they've sort of remade it into an animated film, now isn't it sort of odd?
I don't think, I think people, honestly, I don't think people are going to remember Cinderella 3 6 months from now, but it's not supposed to, this stuff's not canon. This isn't Lord of the Rings, this isn't the Bible, it's just.
Right, but you know.
It depends who you talk
when
to.
You have, but when you have, like two things, you know, I don't know.
I understand what you're saying, but I think he's right. First of all, the crossover audience is probably very small.
Right.
To the extent that they exist, they're probably 6 years old, and they're sleeping through it on the cruise. So.
But in a stroke of brilliance, one of the bonus features on this disc...
That is a stroke of brilliance.
...was behind the scenes of Twice Charmed. So for those people who are enjoying the film, they're enticed to the cruise line because here's this similar story. Come see live actors performing this musical.
Right.
And for Disney cruise fans, it's a chance to see behind the scenes of the production because the quality of performers, the quality of staff, and the technology that they use to put those shows on the Disney Cruise Line is simply astounding.
Well, I really miss the cruise. One of the things I miss about the cruise is Pirate Night, which is really awesome. Night. And we'll talk about that at some point in the future podcast.
Well, I've got some stories for Pirate Night.
Do you?
You should know.
All right, maybe I should get those off air. What kind of stories are these?
No, you remember, our captain did a magnificent job of recreating a costume like Captain Jack Sparrow.
He does. He is the spitting image of Captain Jack Sparrow.
Well, the little ones on board were chasing him around the ship.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, thinking I was, yeah.
I think Captain John was actually the original articulated character.
Ba-dum-bum. Captain, you got a pirate update for us this week?
A pirate update. Well, first off, people are rumoring again, considering for the Super Bowl there was no pirate presence, that
we watched the whole game for nothing.
Yes.
They had a Meet the Robinsons trailer.
Watched the whole game for nothing.
Yeah. Anyway, what was I saying? I completely lost my track.
Pirate trailer
for the Academy Awards, rather than for the Super Bowl.
That's the speculation now?
That's the speculation at the current time.
All right, well, now I'll watch that, hopefully.
And then you'll watch March Madness. And
we'll see, but see, I have a reason to watch that because Pirates has been nominated, you know, for, like, special effects and stuff, so I've got something to root for there.
Cool.
So.
Any other pirate news? Maybe?
Maybe the premiere on May 19th at Disneyland Park, perhaps.
Really? It's not been officially announced, or has it?
It's been pretty much confirmed by my sources. Ooh. Yes, it's pretty much been confirmed.
CJ's got some inside.
He knows Orlando Bloom.
So the park will close. The park will close at 5, but actually some areas will close at 3 for setup. So that could be very confusing if you're there on vacation.
What
so
park would that be?
That would be Disneyland Park.
Oh, see, I heard a rumor California. That this year they were going to do the premiere at DCA. Not true.
Actually, there were rumors that they were going to be doing it in Long Beach, but they went back to Disney.
Is there a theme park in Long Beach we're not aware of?
Oh, yeah, Port Disney. Sorry, oldie but goodie.
Well, an oldie.
And Port Disney would be the Long Beach theme park idea, right? That they
right,
Disney
proposed. That's why
that
Disney, did they own the Queen Mary for a while
yes,
there?
Yeah, they were going to build it was like a water-based attraction.
Would it be like Paradise Pier?
I got a question. Disney owned the Queen Mary for a while.
Yeah.
And now we have Disney Cruise Line. Why didn't they just sail that one?
Oh, don't get me started. We were going to build a theme park at the Port of Long Beach and decided not to. 5 years or later, whatever it was, 10 years later, they decide that they need to go bring the Disney magic over for 10 weeks of sailings, or 12 weeks, whatever it was, and then they're doing it again because of demand. Could you imagine if we had a theme park there and our own port, but no one thought of the Disney Cruise Line at that point, and it's sad, really.
Okay, but back to the pirates.
Sorry, back to pirates. Okay, so we've got the premiere covered. And also Pirates Online, the multiplayer game.
That's right.
In the spring. I don't think an actual date has been announced for that.
Same day as last one.
Spring.
Is that the one where there's a... I know I read something about a multiplayer game with a free version and a paid
yes,
version.
Yes, there is. You can play for free, or you could unlock more features by, I think it's $10 a month, like $9.95 a month.
Yeah, something pretty reasonable.
Yeah, the free version has its advertising. It'll have some advertising involved, and it doesn't have as many features as the subscription-based.
Okay. You looking forward to that, TJ?
I'm looking forward to it.
You big on the multiplayer online games?
Actually, no. This would probably be one that I'd probably get into more thoroughly. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'm not looking forward
to it. Well, there was the virtual Magic Kingdom phase for a little bit.
Is that still around?
Yes, it is. I'm not quite sure why, but it is.
People, yeah.
Do you still play it at all, Rebecca? I know you were into it for a while.
I stop by every now and again. I was around people who were a little too involved in it and kind of creeped me out, so I backed off.
Don't you hate it when fans go overboard and start websites and
talk about it incessantly?
Yeah, then they start, like, you know, like,
podcasts.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Go to the park all the time.
Dude, that's scary stuff.
If I ever become one of those people, Rebecca, you let me know.
Ding, 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 ding.
We have a winner.
There is one more pirate-related update for this week. Maybe Rebecca would like to take this one.
We're just invading today,
aren't
we? I'm sorry.
Yes,
pirates.
I'm taking over. Oh, no, you're taking over?
No, the pirates are taking over.
The pirates
they're, like,
are
all over,
over
the place lately, aren't we?
Well, I think
my favorite attraction.
I think it's their revenge for all the princess talk with Cinderella. But on the March, I think it's March 18th, DisneyGallery.com
right.
has all the details. Disneyland is going to be hosting a 40th anniversary celebration of Pirates of the Caribbean, and they're going to have various merchandise releases, as well as some of the Imagineers that were involved in the creation of the attraction. Legendary Harriet Burns, Blaine Gibson. I know I saw on the list, I saw Alice Davis mentioned.
Right.
And by the way, if you have a chance to chat with Alice Davis, but not on stage, because she has this great story regarding Walt Disney riding through Pirates of the Caribbean
yeah.
and the auctioneer. But it's not one that would be appropriate for small children and on stage. But if you can catch her for a moment, it's quite a cute story, and she tells it with a little bit of a blush that makes it a lot of fun. So be sure and ask Alice about Walt Disney, an early ride on Pirates, and the auctioneer.
And again, you can read details of that event at DisneyGallery.com. But the only thing more popular than Pirates of the Caribbean
yay.
Is some kid named Harry Potter.
Yeah, some kid.
And there was some sort of Disney news regarding that this week. First of all, while we were gone, apparently J.K. Rowling did announce the date. Apparently while we were gone, J.K. Rowling did announce the date of release of the final Harry Potter book, which is
July 21st.
And what's the name of the book?
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Deathly
Hallows.
Deathly Hallows. Oh, Deathly Hallows.
Hallows or Gallows?
Hallows. As in like...
I don't know why. I kept thinking it was Gallows this whole time. And I did the little puzzle that she had on her website, figured it out, and it stuck
yeah.
in my head as
yeah.
Gallows.
Hallows, like as Halloween.
Oh, this is Halloween.
And quite a while ago, maybe even a year or more ago, our good friend Jim Hill over at jimhillmedia.com was saying that Disney was in the driver's seat for creating a Harry Potter-related attraction. And I know on the Harry Potter boards, and I think J.K. Rowling herself...
Rowling.
Dang it.
You have to...
That Walt Disney guy. No cool.
Wait, oh, that Walt Disney... He created Mackie Mouse, right?
Mikey Mouse.
No, I forgot again. J.K. Rowling, right?
Yes.
Rowling.
Okay.
Look, it looks like Row.
Rowling.
It looks like Rowling.
J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling definitely denied that Disney was working on an attraction for them. Jim Hill stuck to his guns up until this past week, where he is now saying that Disney has lost that battle, and Universal Studios is now working on a Harry Potter attraction. And he says that it's... going to be using the KUKA, which is this huge, well, it can be huge, it can be small, but robotic arm. You can see it at Disney in the Nemo attraction at Epcot. It moves the, what's the name of the fish?
Anglerfish.
Yeah, I can say KUKA, but I can't say angler.
The rolling fish.
And he says a much larger version, obviously, is going to be used for a Harry Potter attraction.
You can also see it, those things better in Interventions, right? Is that the same thing?
Yeah,
the
Interventions.
Yeah, those are KUKAs, too.
The rocket
robots.
Yeah,
the rocket robots. Because they're actually illuminated, whereas the KUKA that operates the anglerfish is in the dark.
And for you Universal fans, you can see it at the Too Fast, Too Furious, or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've seen some video of on YouTube, and that's really too dumb. I mean, the technology is cool, but to watch it, it looks like a couple of cars on arms.
No, but in this case, you'd be in the car.
No, that's cool.
So
I'm not saying the Harry Potter attraction would be dumb, but anyway. We've got a couple of Harry Potter... I don't know. Are you a big Harry Potter fan, Hanboy?
No.
We got a couple of Harry Potter fans here. What do you guys think of a Disney perhaps not doing, or do you think it would have been a good idea for Disney to have the Harry Potter anyway?
The funny thing is that I never really heard about Disney being the one to really get the rights to do a Harry Potter attraction in the first place, mostly. I always was hearing from Universal.
Maybe you've got better sources than Big Jim.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, I mean, you know, I heard Disney every now and then, but I really thought Universal was going to went out anyway.
Are you cool with that, or would you, being a Disney fan, do you think Disney doing Harry Potter would be a good thing?
See, for one thing, Disney would be good just because I think it would just fit in very well. You know, you've got basically kids all over the world are already going there anyway. So now that you've got, you know, Harry Potter, which is one of the biggest, you know, thing for kids and, you know, even for older kids.
Like us.
Like us, yeah. It would be a very good asset. But yet, Universal, you know, you've got, you could probably do it a little bit more thrill-oriented, and considering Harry Potter is a very sort of action-packed sort of attraction, you probably would get something a little bit more suitable for the fans. Not to mention, Islands of Adventure, they've got the sort of mythological-themed area anyway, so I figure that if they do this Harry Potter ride, it would probably go into the Lost Coven area of Islands of Adventure.
If the Islands of Adventure rumor is true, then I'm very excited about it, because the big difference for me between a Disney experience and a Universal experience is that typically, and not so much with Islands of Adventure, so let's just think Universal Studios versus Disney theme parks, is that Disney tends to be more immersive experience for me. When I go to a place, I feel like I'm being transported to that location, whereas Universal was more, I'm on the movie set of this location.
Right.
And so, therefore, for me, as a Harry Potter fan, the concept of an attraction that I go to where I feel as though I've stepped into the world of Harry Potter, I'm stepping into Hogwarts Castle, or I'm stepping into, you know, Diagon Alley or whatever, that is more appealing to me than I'm stepping onto the set of Harry Potter.
Right.
That's
so, Islands of Adventure, when I read the Islands of Adventure aspect of this rumor, that I was like, that sounds very, that was very exciting for me as a Potter.
And considering, really, the Lost Coven area really has got some winners there with Poseidon's Fury and Sinbad. So you've got the area there that you could really deal with, and you've got Dueling Dragons there. So dragons are already in Harry Potter books, so you could actually sort of tie in like the whole area together.
I think you can build the Harry Potter attraction in the Dueling Dragons queue line. That thing is huge.
See, the one thing that they would probably want to even go the extra mile and probably like change the backstory behind Dueling Dragons too.
Well, the rumor's been, or a rumor has been, they're actually going to redo that land as a, I don't know, Harry Potter land or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Potterville, would that be the
correct name? No, I think that's the name of the land.
Yeah, that the Midway area would become like Diagon Alley, et cetera, et cetera.
And you would get rid of the Sinbad if that happens, you'd be getting rid of the Sinbad show, which is just not very good. I mean, I'm sure there are people who love it, but
no.
I really don't like it. And it's for people who don't live in Central Florida, it's an amphitheater style show where you're looking down on a set that is a kind of a cavern. The highlight of it is a point at which a witch is set on fire and falls into a pit.
And that part's cool.
That effect is cool. But the rest of it is just
20 minutes to get there.
The script is not very good, and the way the stage is set up, they have a ship's mast in the center of the seating area, and so even we went on a day when there were like 40 people in the theater, and I still couldn't see.
To paraphrase, there is not a good seat in the house.
Yeah, so that was disappointing. And then the other attraction that would probably be impacted by this would be the
Poseidon's Fury, which they'd probably replace entirely with this attraction.
Which that felt to me very similar to an experience one might have at one of the strip malls in Vegas.
It's very Vegas-y.
You go into this darkened room, and there's this tale of Greek mythology? Is that what we're experiencing?
It's fake mythology, I think is a better word.
And you go into this room, and the cool portion is there's this whirling water, right?
Water vortex.
You walk through this water vortex into
it's
the.
It's literally water rushing over your head.
It's very cool.
It's
kind of like that tunnel at Universal Studios that you drive through on the tram where the. But it's actual water, and so that's cool.
Hopefully they can incorporate that into the Harry Potter
attraction. I can guarantee one thing. If Universal builds a Harry Potter attraction, it will have one good effect, and it'll take 20 minutes to get there.
You've got Spider-Man, which is great there. I mean, that's on the other side of the theme park, but that's a fun attraction.
Yeah.
And then you've got Jurassic Park there, which is a fun attraction, an immersive attraction. And then I think that the Dudley Do-Right's Ripshaw Falls is one of the best Flume rides.
I think both their water rides are excellent.
I love the Flume ride.
All the rides there were water rides.
We get pretty wet on a lot of the rides. But see, for me, Cat in the Hat's disappointing, and that the theming only goes three quarters of the way up, and then I can see all the
speakers.
yeah, I can see all the speakers or whatever, so I kind of get transported out of the Dr. Seuss
world. But before you get to that point, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
I from a Disney losing Harry Potter, if they ever had Harry Potter, I don't see the loss. We have enough creative juices going. I mean, who needs Harry Potter when you have Haunted High School Musical coming out?
It's true, this isn't 1985 when you had to go out to Lucas to get some properties. I mean, you know, we've got some good movies coming out. What do we have? Yeah, Tarzan? Treasure Planet?
Well, and now that we have that Indiana Jones, like, they set a release date for Indy 4.
Yep.
Well, that whole stunt show is going to have a whole new life to it.
Stunt show that. Who thought that with the opening of Life Motors Action, the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular might actually go away?
And the nice thing is that Disneyland, they don't have to even touch the Temple of the Forbidden Eye attraction because it's different every time you go on it. So it's timeless. But yeah,
it's still the best attraction in the world, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
Seriously?
What's better?
An Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom?
Spider-Man.
What's better?
Oh, Temple of Doom? That would be a movie.
I'm sorry.
Temple of the Forbidden Eye.
Temple of the Forbidden Eye. What's better?
Yeah.
Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man.
I don't know. I like Splash Mountain better.
Oh, okay.
I guess Rebecca just proves she's not always right. Oh, well.
No, I was
fanboy that said that. Not,
no tacos
not Doobie.
For you.
Splash Mountain. I mean, you know what? I really do love Splash Mountain.
Hey, I'm the one that said universal attraction of Indiana Jones. You should be firing the guns.
I like
here.
Spider-Man, but it doesn't. Whatever. For another day, because we have reached our time limit on this episode of the Laughing Place podcast. But thank you for joining us. Thank you, fanboy.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Captain John.
Arr.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you,
Doobie. You're welcome. And it's been a lot of fun. We hope you'll join us again next week. The same place, same channel, same URL. I guess slightly different URL. You'll just hear the same one again.
Different time, however, depending
on when you download it.
Depending on when you play it.
When I upload it. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@laughingplace.com via email.
You can tell Doobie why Indiana Jones is not the greatest attraction of all time.
Or yes, you can tell Rebecca why Indiana Jones is the greatest attraction
of all time. Don't write me and tell me why it's not without telling me what is, because it is. And I wasn't even an Indy fan when it opened, but looking now, it's 12 years later? Nope, still number one. Or you can call us toll-free at 866-718-9408 and leave a message telling Rebecca why Indy is the best attraction of all time. That's 866-718-9408. And you can leave a message for us on the discussion boards. Just go to thelastplace.com discussion boards and look for the podcast section. And with that, I would just like to close by saying, fanboy, thank you for being our fiend.
You're welcome.
And for those of you who don't follow Doobie and Fanboy around all the time, during the the Disney Cruise Line performance of Golden Mickey's, the cast unfortunately swapped the letters of the F and the R to spell friendship at the conclusion of the very cute and adorable You've Got a Friend in Me song, which has led the two of them to now call each other our fiends.
And if you threw a party and invited everyone you knew, you would see the biggest gift would be from me, and the card attached would
everybody,
say, thank you for being our fiend.
Welcome to my world.